Most of us have a story to tell and some great content. And I think it's really about asking yourself and digging deeper whether you can tell a story. Because...
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. We're leading a healthcare revolution by showing natural health and fitness experts how to become community influencers so they can build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, easily actionable expert branding and heart-centered marketing strategies so you can flood your practice with high-quality patients, building a healthier and happier community. And now your hosts, Angus Pike and Tony Rose.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Tony and Angus here, and welcome to this episode. We had a great chat with Dr. Jennifer Barham Floriani, chiropractor, author, mother, celebrity in her own right. We had a wonderful chat.
One of our good friends,
and one of our dear friends, who we studied with all the way back in, 25 years ago at university. So, a lovely chat with an old friend.
Now, here's what's important. If you've got a book in you, how do you wake at night fantasizing about sharing a message in a book? So many of us do. I don't know across it, but so many of us as health practitioners, we get into it because we want to make a difference to our world. And often we see the power and the influence that writing a book has. Jen has written 2 books in hard copies, multiple kind of digital books there as well, sold hundreds of thousands of copies. And she takes us through the whole process. We talk about the difference between self-publishing to going through a publisher. We talk about editing. We talk about the challenges that Jen had along the way. And I found this fascinating because Jen's a great friend of ours, and we often don't get an opportunity to interview a friend like this as well. But Jen shared incredibly openly about writing a book. So if you've got a book inside of you, if you're wanting to take your message outside of your practice, if you're wanting to help more people and not be just kind of constrained by your four walls, you're going to love this episode. There are so many wonderful nuts and bolts that this episode shares. And this episode is brought to you by the release of the Community Influencer Program. So this is an online learning program that Tony and I have. It's a community that we're building there too of like-minded health practitioners. There's chiropractors and naturopaths and personal trainers. We really believe this is that we need to come together, gang. Our world right now is suffering because mostly they don't understand really where true health comes from. They're searching for health in a pill, in a bottle, in a surgery, and all these things can be valuable. But you know what really health comes from? When it comes from the lifestyle that we live. And when we come together and learn the strategies of sharing our message one to many, videos, blogs, setting your website up in the right way, then it takes your practice outside of your four walls, much like we were talking about beforehand too. One of the things I love about this group very quickly is the community that's really developing here as well. Like-minded people.
Absolutely. It can be lonely in practice. You know, we're out there feeling like we're the only ones with this message, the only ones getting to the real cause of people's problems. But if we can come together in a community and share and help each other grow and, become better influencers in our communities, then, it's the place for you. So
this is Netflix for us as practitioners to get in there to. But, the content that you're consuming is all about those things that we weren't taught at school. Mm. Like, how do we do social media advertising properly? That's not just about fluff, but, do you know how to actually run an ad on there? Do you know how to get somebody's email address? Do you know the importance of getting somebody's email address? Did you know that your audience is 6 times more likely to make an appointment at your practice if you're sending an email to them as opposed to just putting a post up on social media? So we go into in-depth about how to do all of these things, how to make videos on just your mobile device, how to edit your videos, how to edit your own website, and a whole bunch of other things, teaching you how to create courses, all those things. All of those are inside Community Influencer. You'll find out all about that over at adiomedia.com/CI for Community Influencer. But without any more chat, let's get over and talk to the generous, there you go.
The generous Jen.
The generous Jen. See you on the inside, gang.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, and we are very excited because we have a guest here in the house, and it is Dr. Jennifer Barham Floriana. Jen, welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, very excited. Guys.
And to think Jen was asking, is this going to be serious? We've gone straight in with a Wiggles start. So
we're missing one, though. Aren't there normally 4?
4 Wiggles, yes. Yeah, well, blue. Oh, no, blue. I haven't got the colours right even. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Very
and
excited.
And in person too, which
in
is
person,
nice.
In person, it's always a pleasure. Now,
We're going to start here because a lot of people know who you are and maybe from some of the things you've done, but some won't.
Yep,
so let's give us a bit of the backstory.
Oh, okay. The short version.
The version.
I grew up in a chiropractic family and from a young age wanted to be a chiropractor, wanted to be an author. And so I met you guys when I was at uni. We trained together and then started in practice and started having babies, wanted to... What are you laughing at?
No, it is because it's babies, because there's like 17 of them we had, so all boys.
Yes, and so I wanted our associates to be able to convey a certain level of clarity and information for patients. So Well-Adjusted Baby started off virtually as that, as information for our associates. And then, like you guys know, as practitioners, allied health practitioners, we get exposed to so much great information, and I became really passionate about then giving that information to parents. So it kind of steamrolled then into a book on pros and cons of all the decisions we make when we want to raise a healthy child. So that's how Well-Adjusted Babies came about, and then I've done Ticklish, which is about developmental milestones and how parents can really engage with their child so they're not lagging. I've done some cookbooks and white papers and a whole lot of things over the last 10 years. And I guess the point with that is the goal was to work within my values. So there came a point in time with so many little people in my life that I wanted to be able to be available to them. So it was like the next chapter of, well, this is when I write and I could keep my brain active and put content out there.
So Well-Adjusted is in what edition at the moment?
It's in a second edition.
But working on third?
On third in, you know, as everything evolves, now taking it to a different platform with videos and courses. And
about how many books sold now?
It's exciting. We've never had a publisher and it's close to 200,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, which is
cool.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's such a wonderful book.
Thank
we
you.
Continue to buy multiple copies of it as well. So we've got you in here today, other than to just brag about amazing books and stuff like that too. So many of us have a book inside of us and it's a great vehicle. You know, in Adio Media, we're all for helping people go one to many. We talk lots about videos, all that kind of stuff there too. But writing a book is one of the oldest ways of going one to many as well. So we want to go from start to finish, like, you know, what are the ups and downs? If someone says, look, you know, I want to write a book, where would they begin? What should they do all the way through to, you know, end result being, you know, self-published, publisher, those kind of things?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, most of us have a story to tell and some great content. And I think it's really about asking yourself and digging deep of whether you can tell a story, because it's like giving a public speech. You know, you can be very bland or you can get vulnerable and be transparent and share stories, and that's what really engages your audience. And so I think there's a lot of people who start writing a book, or they might put a book out there and think it'll be this gravy train to success. And I think unless it's really authentic and who you are and you can build your passion into it, then it doesn't necessarily have a life of its own. So I think...
Which Well-Adjusted has one of the most authentic, inspiring stories of the beginning of it.
Oh, beautiful. It is.
And it's funny because that's the point about allowing yourself to be vulnerable, because, you know, there's a lot of content talking about decisions parents make, and yet it got to a point where I then had to get feedback, you know, from people before we went to the publishing stage. So I gave it to, you know, a lot of different patients, friends, different people. And I had my birth stories at the end of the book. And the consistent feedback was, no, you have to put your birth stories at the start. And I was like, oh, why, you know? And they're like, because it makes you relatable.
Yes.
And that made me feel nervous for two reasons, because the birth stories, you know, as a health practitioner, I was sharing what had happened with our births, which was nothing like I intended. You know, the health practitioner, you think you'll have these perfect births, and they weren't. So it was being really transparent about that, which made me feel nervous. And then the second part was, okay, if I'm sharing these stories, I'm going to make them as real as they were. And there were all sorts of details, you know, about orgasms in labour and all of these things. And I was like, yeah, I can't put them at the start, you know. But by doing that, people would then read it and think, okay, yes, she's a health practitioner, but she's relatable.
Oh.
And she's had all these ups and downs. And so I think the first point is, yes, if you've got a story to tell, can you dig deeper and really be a storyteller and be authentic about it. Mm.
Can we learn that? Is that a learnable skill?
I think so. If you get the courage and just realize that, you know, as humanity, we learn the most through opening our hearts and just speaking at that level.
Is there a case that says that if you can't find a vulnerability or something that allows you to tell the story, then you're writing the wrong book? Is that, if I want to write a book on tennis, but I can't find an authentic passion or something about me, well, I shouldn't write on tennis, I should write on golf. Like, is that, do you think that's true or is it not?
Do you know, maybe it's
like you've got a great story, a great authentic story, which allows you then to write a book on raising healthy families.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if someone's...
I think, you know, it's like anything, everyone's journey is individual. So there'll be people who want to write a book for different reasons. And some people, their initial goal is they want to be a speaker. And then once you get on that circuit, it kind of is just what evolves next of thinking, well, I need a product because people want to take me home, mm-hmm. they want to listen to me. So a lot of people will write or want to write a book from being a public speaker, and which is a great vehicle too. But I think if we can all just hang on to letting things evolve, so get it out there, maybe have it as a first draft and then add to it, you know what I mean? And put more emotion into it as you can, as you have those experiences, if it's not what you first gravitate towards, you know, is sharing all of that.
So. When you started with Well-Adjusted Babies, did you know where it was going to go? Like when you first sat down, first word started writing, like how much of an outline, you know, I'm a chiropractor sitting here, I want to share a story. How much of that do I need to have planned out, or is it a bit of a work in progress?
I guess, again, it depends on how you as a, you know, personality work. Certainly for me initially, I had it more structured of this will be this section, this is what I'll cover, this will be the second section and the third. And I think one of the things I had to learn early on was to just get your information down, you know, because you can have that perfectionistic nature where you want this chapter to be perfect and then you'll move on to the next chapter. And I think that the way life unfolds is you should just really, when you've got your set time to write, to just sit down and write with what flows. And it might be a section that's towards the end and you might not go back to it for another 3 months. And it doesn't have to be perfect because it will evolve. And so my greatest advice would be to just whatever you feel like writing about, whatever's most, you know, in your forebrain, to get that done. And for me, it would be I would literally sit down and I would find some research on my desk that either Simon had put there or I'd had from a few months before, and it would just be first cab off the rank sort of thing. And I'd go, okay, where does this sit? How would I explain this to a mum? And I'd just start working with that. And then it would just evolve. And you'd go back to an area and you'd go, that's what I needed to tweak that.
Because, I mean, how many references are there with Well-Adjusted?
7,320,000.
Yeah. It's close to 1,000.
Yeah.
But that was 5 years of work when I had little babies, you know. So then the second edition took 12 months. And, you know, everyone will do it within their own time frames depending on what's going on for them. But I guess the key is just to keep going with it. Don't make everything feel like it's got to be perfect.
And then if you're in a flow going through things, you got awesome research there. I know I'm getting the nitty-gritties, but, like, where does that fit? Well, I need to find a reference for that. Do you just make a mark of that and then just keep on going? Or
Now, the way that I wrote this one, you know, was I hadn't had a lot of experience in writing a research piece, but now, it's pretty structured. You know, you can use different systems within your computer. There's probably 5 different ones, and you can, you know, it'll automatically create footnotes, and then when you go back in and add to it, it'll just alter it for you.
Yes.
So it's not as daunting as it probably was when I was starting that.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Looking back when you started that, I'm interested in, you know, people think, I don't know enough about something to write.
Yeah.
You look at what you know about parenting, birthing, etc. now. How much did you know back then before you started writing the book?
In comparison to now, probably fairly insignificant, you know.
And so you were how long out in practice when you started writing that?
Probably 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So which is good, because we tell ourselves these stories I'll get onto this when, I don't know enough. but five years in practice and having lived a whole life that reflected that, a lot of that as well, 5 years of university, I just wonder how often, you know, I'll be good enough when and where this has kind of come from. So I think that's kind of an interesting...
I think we all do that, you know, and particularly as a writer, you know, we would possibly be able to get a certain amount of content done and then go, holy cow, now what? You know, who am I to think that I can put this out there? Yeah. Who will it resonate with? Will it? And we second guess ourselves.
Yes.
And that's why I think, again, it's really important just to let it evolve. You can get one draft done and you might not go back to it for 6 months and then, you know, your passion will be reignited and you think, actually, damn it, this is really relevant for a lot of people and you'll go again. And I think it's, you know, not letting that voice in your head second guess yourself to a point where you don't put it out there. Just let it, you know, keep evolving and then do whatever it takes within your values. Like, so, like we've talked about, I had little kids when I was writing this and I just kept saying, okay, we'll put it out there. And we had a lot of professional support, which was fantastic. And at the same time, there were people saying to me, you know, well, why have you, you know, stopped practice? You should be back in practice. And I was completely fulfilled in letting this book evolve and working on that and doing parenting within my values. And there were people who would then say, you should be on television every week, you should, you know, do radio. But I was breastfeeding kids, you know, I had that lactating brain. So for me, it was like, well, that was, it was too big a leap. So I think my point with this is, you know, let your book evolve. And if your sole focus is to make money out of it, then perhaps, you know, you're pushing something rather than getting in the flow and letting everything unfold. And I wouldn't have imagined not having a publisher, not having a PR marketing firm and having really focused on media that we would have sold so many. And I think the point behind that is if you really do speak from your heart and you're passionate, then it just flows. People speak, you know, parents in particular, mothers share, you've got to get this book. You know, so finding that story within you that resonates, I think, is really important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's it hasn't been all roses, though, has it?
No.
There's been some challenges. What, writing the book, what were the challenges? What did you come up against? That obviously raising children, you know, and the environment that with which you wrote it, but what else came up for you?
Yeah, and it's exactly, you know, like what we were just saying, you second guess yourself, because the content I wanted to cover was questions that we as allied health practitioners ask ourselves because we get exposed to, you know, what's the downside of giving a child antibiotics or vaccines or, you know, not exposing them to great bacteria and dirt and all of those things. We get exposed to that. So I really wanted it to be a holistic guide for parents, but it meant that there were chapters in there that were fairly controversial. And I can remember when I was in the initial form, I gave it to one of my patients. She was long-term in Random House. And she said to me, she took it home, she read it, she came back, she'd written over it, she'd earmarked, and she said, I love it. I really love it. She said, but I'll tell you this now, it's 10 years ahead of its time. She said, if we take this on, you'll have to rewrite so many sections and we will give you the structure of what you're allowed and what you're not allowed to say. She said, if you can afford it, self-publish. She said, because this book needs to be told, needs to be out there, but it's just, it's ahead of its time, which was great advice. At the time, I was like, oh, you know, I could have chosen to be wounded by that. And yet the way she said it, woman to woman, was like, be a trailblazer, just go for it. So there's different options when you put a book out there. You can self-publish, you can go with a publishing company. But again, that has things that you would need to look into. So a lot of
let's talk about those, because if somebody doesn't know what is self-publishing,
what's involved in that?
Explain the difference between the two of them. What are the pros and cons as far as you're aware?
Yeah, so my understanding is if you go with a publishing company and it's your first book, then they can be, particularly I guess if it's research-based and it's not, you know, fiction, then they could have their ethos in and around what they want to put out there with their branding on it as well. So there may be some limitations with that. But I guess the big drawback is that you only earn a certain percentage, and it can be anywhere from 3 to 10% of all sales if you go with a publishing house. And then my understanding as well is that first 12 months you really have to work it. You know, you have to be out there and doing talks and promoting, and they will get the books there, but you're working hard to get those sales. And after 12 to 18 months, if you're not still turning over a large volume of books, then they can drop you, or they can half the price of your book, or take it down to a third, sell it here, there and everywhere for $3, and you don't have any say around what that looks like moving forward.
Mm.
So there's a lot of limitations about that. Mm. You can self-publish.
But the publishing, yeah. Would it be unusual for a first-time author to get an advance to me? Because that's one of the things people often talk about. Yeah. Well, they'll pay me to write the book.
Yeah.
That would be unlikely unless you had a tremendous following or a big name or something beforehand.
Yeah. I'd imagine you could negotiate that if you did have a great social media audience and things. But the other option then is to self-publish, which is something in this day and age I'd recommend everyone do, even if it was for 6 to 12 months. While you're really getting feedback on your book, you know, engage the people you need to for editing and graphics and all of that, then just go to on-demand, you know, like a Lulu printing or something like that. Print a small number, take it if you're doing talks, sell, you know, a few thousand books and get feedback. And then once you've really refined it, you know, you've mastered whatever your message is, then potentially go to a publishing house.
Mm.
When you self-publish, like for us, we have our stock in London, we have it in LA, we have it here. So you're constantly having people monitor your stock levels. You've got to print here, there and everywhere. And we have someone who oversees, you know, all the orders and things. But that's, for us, that's been fine. With this next edition and things, we will go to a publishing house and just hopefully be able to negotiate something really great and move forward from there.
With some runs on the board.
Yeah, with a track record and go, all right, let's negotiate.
Yeah. And because, too, I think who I am as a writer has changed this time, too. You know, I'm very much now, everything I'm writing is for, even more so that, you know, eyeball conversation with parents versus, you know, some of this was also for practitioners as well, for them to feel really empowered of what we offer as allied health practitioners, you know, versus the, you know, the orthodox model for raising kids or birthing. So, yeah, you know, you change and evolve as a writer too. So,
You mentioned about an editor. How important is it to have an editor, even if you're self-publishing? You know, to what stage? What do they do?
Super duper.
Yeah. And how much do they cost? How do you find one if you're self-publishing?
And look, I've had different experiences. My preference is to use the editor I've probably had for 10 years, and she is super slow, methodical, but she's very good and she gives great feedback. When I first had her for the second edition of Well Adjusted Baby, she didn't know anything about birthing, pregnancy, chiropractic. So her questions were gold, really, because it was like, this is not enough detail for me to understand what you're saying. And I think when you're writing about content you know for so long, you can miss some of that. So I think an editor is crucial, and to get one who's really good. So for another book, I also did a recipe book, we engaged an editing firm. Now hopeless.
Right.
Like, you know, we had three people there pumping through it. But they just didn't do a great job. So then I had to go back to the editor, you know, anyway.
So what does that look like? What's a great job? What's not a great job? Obviously making sure that there's enough detail, but is it also, I mean, is it simply the typos and how it's laid? Is it how it's laid out? Is it?
Yeah. So they really just did typos.
Right.
Whereas my experience with great editors is they will take a paragraph and they might move a sentence to the start and, you know, restructure something on a page to have it be clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do typos, but they look for continuity throughout your book as well, you know, for everything with how you use speech marks to when do you use italics. And in my experience, you can just relax because, you know, they're a professional, they've got the entire volume covered for that continuity and, they really are masters at what they do.
And do they edit as they go, or do you have the final book and give it to them? How does that work?
In my experience, she would rather have the whole thing and then, like the process of writing, she will go through everything and then she'll go through it again and then she has a pause and then she sends it out to somebody else. So she always recommends a second person once she's gone through it twice heavily.
Right.
And then she will go over it again after they have.
And then how long does that time process take?
That's the challenging thing as an author because often you get so excited. It's like, I'm done, I'm ready, you've gotten great feedback. Yeah. But a good editor will take another 4 months at least.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And they charge, Probably now she's easily $100 an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
So how many, as a ballpark, to edit something, yeah, 4 months, $100 an hour, is in, so are we talking a 40-hour week, $100, like it's in $4,000 a week? And
yeah, so if I do a magazine article, I even get her to do those for me.
Yes.
Because I can just relax then and knowing that it's perfect and, you know. So for a magazine article, she'll probably spend 6 hours on it.
Right.
Wow.
So
adds, yeah, up.
It does. I mean, and particularly because a lot of writers won't get paid for a magazine article either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
So my quick kind of maths in terms of what you're looking at from there is 40 or 50 grand plus in editing.
Well, she was probably, that's what she would charge now is 100, yes, an hour. At the time, it was about 60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so even if we come back, there's, yes, 30 grand of editing,
exactly,
in a book like
and
that.
And that's separate to someone who does all your graphics.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, and then it's great to have a team who are happy to work together. So often my editor would ring the graphics guy and say, look, this needs to move because it doesn't make sense here. And, you know, so a lot of that. Yeah. So there is a bit involved, and that would be why a publishing house would take so much as well.
Yeah.
You know, but it can be done.
Right. So the publishing house is going to look after all of that, yes, for you, all the editing. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's mind-boggling. If you were to, obviously, the second edition, third edition in print, if you were to do it again, I mean, this is a, you know, what, 700-page,
yeah, yeah,
book. It's a, mm-hmm, it's the Bible, gang, it's the Bible of holistic parenting.
Yeah.
It really is. Would you have made it as big, bigger, smaller? Do you think it's perfect size? What's your...
I think it's interesting because a lot of people say that, you know, perhaps we've moved through the time of a written book and everyone's reading online and... you know, audible books, which I think is very true. But I think for my demographic of pregnant women, there's a lot of pregnant women who actually like to still sit down and read a physical book. And, you know, whether it's because they have some awareness about, you know, being on digital equipment and their unborn baby, or whether, you know, they just want to take a bath, you know, and have a book while they're there. So I think it's worked really well. And a lot of the feedback we have has been exactly that, where they feel like perhaps because of the heaviness of it, that it is a Bible and they can go and get, you know, pretty much all of the content they want from that one book.
It's one of those books, to my experience with it, is it's often not a cover-to-cover book that people read from there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's daunting, but it is a bit of a choose-your-own-adventure through there, depending on where you're at, and then be able to go back and use it as a resource.
Exactly. And also with dads too, you know, like the funny thing is a dad might not read the whole thing like a really conscientious pregnant mum, but they'll read certain sections, you know, which again is about going with it. And like I said, you know, why it's funny that those birth stories are at the start, because the number of dads who've come up to me at a talk and, you know, they've read the birth stories and they've read the partner section and they'll sort of like your birth story. It's like, great. So, you know, I guess that's important to know your audience too and realise that there may be a partner who will be drawn to certain sections.
Mm.
And I think, you know, today, you know, to answer your question, Tone, probably some of the layout would be different. I would simplify it more. But that's what this whole next edition is all about, you know, and summary sections and all of that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we live in such a great time now where videos are just a gold for so many people who would rather watch a video too.
Yep.
So, you know, for people writing books, perhaps thinking about could there be companion things that go with it, you know, in their marketing and...
There's room for that whole kind of multimedia.
Yeah.
We both just recently read Aubrey Marcus's Own the Day, and it was interesting how much that was from the book to companion videos. It really had you dancing around a lot. It was quite all-encompassing to for him to sort of show some of the experiences too.
Yeah.
Ticklish is very different in terms of volume, style, all those kind of things. Tell us a little bit about that and what was different about that process.
So, Angus, I guess, you know, as like a lot of the allied health practitioners would know, there's a lot of kids today challenged with, you know, developmental issues. So not, you know, aside from health challenges, and I really wanted to create something that was smaller, that was, you know, colour, easy for parents to read, that had, you know, developmental charts and things.
Yes.
Again, practitioners could use it, but parents could just have, you know, a quick sit down, read certain sections, take one point home with them from, you know, one single page and feel like they could go, right, let's go with this. So it is a different feel for sure.
And then the time frames to put all that together?
Ticklish was probably about 8 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. was different, totally different feel. Yeah. And some of the content, you know, I could extract from other things that I'd done. So, yeah, but it appeals, you know, well-adjusted babies, I guess, is, you know, pregnant couples, couples with early babies and kids, whereas ticklish can be up to the age of 12. And what we often find is that there might be a couple who know that there's a, you know, a nephew or someone in the family who's lagging developmentally. It's an easy book to say, oh, look, you might want to have a read of this, because it just starts a conversation in and around what that might look like if a child is not thriving developmentally. So, you know, I think a key thing for anyone thinking about writing a book is exactly that, of how do I share the story in a vulnerable, engaging way, but then how do I make it conversational? Because, you know, we all know none of us want to be lectured to and, you know, be trying to, you know, read something that feels like, even as a reader, that we're not enough in comparison to, you know, this guru that we're reading. Whereas if they're vulnerable, if it's all conversational, I think it's easier for a reader to stay engaged. And so with talking about, you know, tricky topics in both, you know, potentially does your child have autism or ADD, or, you know, have antibiotics had an effect? If it's conversational, then they don't feel like, oh, God, this is too much, I'm going to put it down. You know, so...
Or short. This was self-published as well?
Yeah.
So 8 months. But again, it's taking in, well, in your case, a lifetime of knowledge, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, you sit down for 8 months to write this book, but that's the putting it all together. You know, it's not looking at the 40 years of life that you've lived, which is the beautiful part. And I think it's the beautiful part of why I love well-adjusted babies is that vulnerability factor of going, I can relate to you and I will believe you a whole lot more because I know you've been through some shit.
Yeah.
And I guess that's one thing that we want to interview you today, because it hasn't been a perfect ride. I want to know about what's been the challenge of getting the book out there.
Yeah. I think with self-publishing, there is definitely that element of you have to create, you know, that momentum, the events, you have to be prepared to do public speaking and those things, which, you know, it was something that... I just had to run with, you know, because there were times initially, those first few years, it would terrify me. You know, I would be backstage with Tourette's or, you know, wanting to be sick. And yet you sort of think, okay, this is my story. If I want parents to be able to, you know, to have access to this book, then I also need for allied health practitioners to understand it and help create that momentum. So it's about being prepared to do whatever it takes within your values. And like I said, you know, at that time with little babies, I wasn't going to do a lot of TV because of some of the conscientious topics, you know, and inevitably even now when I do TV and radio, I just always have to be prepared for those rogue questions of, you know, so are you anti this or are you anti that? And which really doesn't serve anyone. It's just for sensational television. So there's media training involved and how do you answer that but direct it back to what you want to discuss? And for me, it's very much about supporting parents and, you know, gaining that awareness, because it's really hard for parents these days to know what to do. So there's a lot of that, really. And I think it's creating the events and the momentum. And now, you know, I'm at a different point in time where I'm ready to go at a whole nother level of whatever it takes to get this out there.
And obviously a lot of the drive of the marketing has been to practitioners to then on sell to their patients. Have you done any to the public?
Not a lot, yeah.
Not a lot, okay.
Yeah.
That's part of the next step?
Yep.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Great.
So I mean, the last 18 months I've done stuff interstate with different groups. But like you guys know, at the moment in Australia and in America and different parts of Europe, it's hard to have a voice about some of these more conservative sort of topics. And so you have to be delicate in how you handle that. And I guess that goes back to your question of it's been a process of itself. You know, one of the chapters, as I said, you know, discusses pros and cons of vaccination. So as a writer, that's created some obstacles. But now, you know, again, as you evolve as a writer, there are ways that I am now having that conversation that are different again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jen, when you're writing the book, is there a process that works for you every morning, 6 to 8, get my coffee, have some incense burning? Are there things like that that you found that have helped you churn out more stuff? Did you get writer's block? How do you deal with all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I think that with time you do realise when you're in the flow and when you're not. So the days that I felt like I was really forcing it, like, okay, I've got 3 hours, I'm really going to pump something out. But if I was in that energy of, right, this has got to happen and I want this section done, sometimes it just wouldn't flow. So now I know that if I actually, you know, I meditate before I sit down or I go for a walk or something like that and just get my energy really clear, my mind clear, it just happens so efficiently.
Mm.
And that's when it's exciting and you realise that, you know, it just, it all comes together. So I guess there is acknowledging that if you're in that state of just trying to force it, just relax. And maybe that's a day where you're just gathering information and sorting and doing that. Maybe, you know, don't have any more coffee that day. Because you never know. Like if you're too wired, it's hard to be in that creative state. And, you know, if you've had a week of high stress, it's hard to get into that creative state. So, you know, as allied health practitioners, we've got access to great, you know, resources. And it might be a breathing technique you do or a meditation technique or something that gets your, you know, your brain feeling synchronized and that you can just get into the flow. Yeah. Mm. So rather than forcing it. But another option too, we did a recipe book and that went through iTunes, which is, again, another option for writers. And you have to break it into sections. So we sold like big volumes of different chapters of this recipe book, but the price point is much lower, you know. And so in our experience, we probably wouldn't do another a book for iTunes, but it is...
So is that a digital book, a digital product?
So yeah, got it. Product.
So you're not printing anything?
Yeah. So there were benefits to that and it was fun to create because, for instance, if we had a recipe with ingredients, we created a big glossary section where people could click on it and then learn about, you know, the health benefits of that ingredient. So we did it as Lunchbox Solutions, empowering parents about what they create for their kids, and it was exciting to do something different. But iTunes, you know, it's, again, it's not something in my experience that has a lot of longevity like physical books.
Got it. So that's more of a sort of a couple of dollars for a chapter or something, is it?
That people would pay,
Yeah, you've got to sell some, sort of sell some volumes. But it's a great way of getting your stuff out there, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, there are different options for people wanting to write books. Like you guys have probably heard, you know, you can go to these weekend seminars and they help you write a book and it's often, you know, with your photo on the front and they take on a lot of that. And, again, it's a great option if someone's really keen to get a book out there. A lot of, I think, public speakers do that. It just comes back to what's your story and how can you really become a storyteller and engage people that way, I think is part of letting it happen.
Do you think, because, you know, you often hear this saying thrown around is that the book is the new business card and, you know, for that reason that the vast majority of people that buy books don't read them anyway, don't open them, let alone read them from cover to cover, and that, you know, a book brings with it a level of authority as well, and that that maybe say, look, you know, don't worry about writing your opus just yet. It might be overkill, but but put something together. Do you have some thoughts around that at all?
Yeah. Again, I think it's a great idea because, you know, I'm all up for letting things evolve too. I think so many times we let that second guessing cause paralysis and we don't ever put anything out there. You know, and if you've got something that you're three quarters really delighted with and you're getting good feedback, it might just be, you know, certain tweaking that you need to do and you've got something that's, you know, completely top notch and then goes, you know, gangbusters. But if you haven't even gotten it to that point and allowed yourself to be vulnerable to get feedback, then, you know, potentially you'll never do it. And then, you know, you've sold out on that option of sharing your story. So I would use it, you know, you could use it as a marketing tool and then be really humble in your distribution about it because people love that humility.
Yes.
You know, this is something I've been working on. If you've got time, I'd love your feedback. You know, I think that there's a lot of people who've had a similar experience to me that I would love to share this with. And that is going to get someone to read their book because, like you say, you know, people get given books all the time, but do they open them? But if you genuinely ask them for feedback and you're humble about it, they're more likely to.
Yeah. I've had some interesting, I was talking with Tony the other day about it, some of the books that I've read recently have been, you know, 150 pages with all the meat stripped off it, but just full of really great content. And it's, you know, 2.5 hours read. That stuff they're talking about. I love that. Whereas there would have been a period in my life where I'm like, now I kind of get to that. And I know for some, there'll be for some people, the thought of 700 pages and 1,000 references, multiple years to write, and $40,000 in editing, plus more nowadays to get to that kind of stuff, might be like, oof, you know. And I would think as our attention span decreases, there's always a need for this as well. But I don't know that that has to, for some of you, that'll be just a calling. Like, it, you know, I remember when you began this channel, like, glad it's you, not me, and grateful for it. You know, it's a book that we've sold many of through our practice and stuff like that too. But, you know, I'd want to let our, you know, our listeners know, hey, it doesn't have to start there. For some of you, it will. But for some of you, it could be tremendous value by something, you know, 20% the size of that.
And again, I think it comes back to like what we said, knowing your audience. So pregnant women are a very specific demographic and happy to have a physical book as well as other resources and parents. But, you know, again, if I was writing something for, you know, a corporate, it would take a very different form.
Yeah.
And it would be snappy and, you know, frank and all of those things to just get them quickly engaged because everyone's busy, you know.
It's such a key point because, you know, practice magnifier number two, you know your audience, narrow your niche down, talk to one group of people. And once you decide who you're going to be talking to, it becomes obvious what needs to be produced.
Yeah.
As well as you said, you know, there's pregnant mums, this is the Bible. It doesn't make sense. No one's going to be calling Ticklish, the book on the top there, the Bible.
Exactly.
It doesn't fit that as great as it is there too. It's, you know, it's interesting to kind of come back and...
And it is, and we've had this conversation before about studying your audience, because even if I go back to those birth stories, you know, we had five very, very different pregnancies and births, and, you know, Abe, who was born still, our third baby, and sharing that story as well as all the fun and giggles of all the other births. But life and death, you know, they're the bookmarks for everyone, and then we all touch on it throughout the journey of parenting and life itself. And so in now knowing my audience a lot better than I did even in starting, those birth stories for different reasons resonate with people. And there's a lot of couples who lose a baby, you know, have a miscarriage or have a stillborn or have all of those things. So I don't know that we can ever dig deep enough to know our audience and how do we, you know, create something that has the ebb and flow of emotions of this is me, this is me being transparent and vulnerable with you all, you know, whether it's that you've lost your wealth or your relationships or whatever your story is, and then engaging them in other ways with humour and great content and all of those things. So it's the blend.
Absolutely. It's not just about throwing some facts down on a page and expecting people to buy it, is it?
And it's just staying with it. I mean, I can't count the number of people who, you know, look at my book and go, oh, I should have written this, or I could have written this. And I think that's what we started with. You know, everyone has a story that they want to tell, but it's digging deep and thinking, what is it that makes your story unique? And then can you go the distance?
I think because, you know, our relationship, our friendship goes right back to university days. And it's a trait that you had even back then. I would watch you study this ability to just methodically grind stuff out. Yeah. Where does that come from?
I think it's that hard work ethic of my family, really. You know, you observe that as a children, and my parents had that, and I like to get something done, you know. And the thing that I've had to reckon with time and time again is putting something out there that might not be perfect to get feedback, because otherwise I could sit on something forever. So that's the balance, you know. But... yeah, I think if you're passionate about it, you just got to sit down and get it out there, and you'll delight in having something done that then can potentially touch so many more lives than you might on a daily basis. And it's part of, you know, your legacy of what you leave as well. And, yeah, it's exciting. I would certainly encourage anyone who has an inkling to just start the process and let it evolve.
Let it see where it goes. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Jen, what's next?
Well, I think, like we said, you know, it's now I'm ready to really go gangbusters with the public.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be in third edition?
Third edition in a different format. So yeah. It'll predominantly be content all online, videos, on all the different platforms. There will be some physical mm-hmm. format as well. But, you know, I'm stockpiling great interviews with people all mm-hmm. over the world who, you know, are mentors for mm-hmm. me, who I really want to create an avenue for parents to have access. And I really want to see it as even more the alternative for what to expect when you're expecting. So where I get to interview great obstetricians who've had a vast, you know, decades of experience, and what advice would they have and why is that, and having heart-to-hearts with midwives and Chinese med practitioners and the whole gamut, you know, so that parents can sit down and go, okay, I may not resonate with chiropractic or I may not resonate with this, but I've had great experiences with Chinese med. What do they talk about? And then opening their filters to all the different aspects of raising, you know, a healthy child and what does that look like through pregnancy and birth. And I think, you know, more than ever, people really want that authenticity now of what's at the bottom of it all. You know, why would I move towards a physiological birth? And it's things that I'm learning that I didn't even know about when I was having my babies. You know, we know so much even from a research perspective of what it means for our babies to go through that process. And then let's dig deeper and what does it give a woman, you know, and her relationship and who she is moving forward. So great conversations is where I really want to take it, and lots of, you know, just sitting on a couch and chatting about things. But that may involve potentially moving overseas and just taking it to a whole new level with the public and staying open to whatever needs to happen.
Exciting times.
Yeah. Very exciting times. I'm very excited for you and and obviously the family as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good.
Any parting thoughts for our listeners, our audience, who maybe have got something inside them that should come out?
Do you know, I think that, again, do whatever it takes so you stop second-guessing yourself. And that might mean spending some money on doing, you know, a personal development seminar or a meditation seminar or something that extracts you from your current reality, where you only identify as, you know, a practitioner in practice or a corporate or, you know, whoever you are, and then the other hats that you wear. Something that extracts you, like a good holiday does, you know, and you actually can settle into something else and go, okay, if I imagine my life moving forward, what else do I want to do? And I think it's giving yourself the permission to just explore it and see what's involved and start the process and, you know, have that that confidence to take a leap and just go for it. You know, I think as Australians, I know this audience is international, but Australians, we have that tendency to really just not want to step up sometimes because we get so into that second guessing. And I don't think it serves anyone, you know, and all of us have a voice. So, you know, potentially just putting it out there.
And that just, you know, we interviewed for our previous podcast, Kerry Bradshaw, and we were talking with her about the journey from practitioner into leader. And we kind of said, like, what's the journey through that? And she said, the first journey is really all about self-esteem. And it was interesting. I was just thinking about it now. You were going for a journey from practitioner into author. Again, it's these levels of self-esteem and self-worth are the very first bridges that we need to cross before we do that. So, yes, we can have bridges of, do I self-publish or do I go with this publisher? How long is my book, all that kind of stuff? None of those bridges are you even going to get to if you can't get over the self-esteem one of,
absolutely,
you know, can I see myself as an author? And it's beautiful. You know, it's you know, you're a dear friend of both Tony and us, and, you know, these books are extraordinary, and we would encourage our audience, have they not read them, for us as Allied Health, they're just such wonderful resources. As well, and Jenny's a shining example of somebody that lives and walks her talk as well. Sweetie, thanks for sharing so openly with us today. It's been nice. We don't get to have conversations with friends like this.
So now we're doing it with an audience.
So that's right. We need to get an audience together for us to kind of, because it's a bit strange to sit down with a friend and ask these kind of questions. We get stuck talking about kids and all those bits and pieces there too. So If people want to find you, what's the best spot
for them? So just with the website.
Yeah, anywhere. How do they find you if they want
to? So welladjusted.co.
Yep.
And all the products are there, and there's an avenue where they can connect with me as well.
Yep.
And we've got a whole host of products. And, yeah, I think, you know, in winding it up, it's having a vision and just sticking with it, because then things just, the universe conspires, people, you know, come into your life, and it'll happen if you just set that intention and you've got great purpose and, you know, speak from your heart. It's a great journey to go on. It's a ride. It's wonderful.
It's a ride. Ride worth going on. So thanks, Jen, for being part of the podcast. We've had a great chat. And, guys, the show notes will be down here. There'll be links to the books, links to welladjusted.co. Get amongst it. It'll be one of those moments where you go, oh, I bought that before Jen was massive. You know, we've known it for 20 years. Oh, 25 years.
It is.
Longer. Wow, crazy. Till next time, gang. Be well.
Thank you.
See you all. Thanks, Jen.